Is the mic on? Episode 96, What's Wrong with Orny Adams? Let me start here. This feels like this should be a lawsuit. I woke up the other day, 6:32 a.m. I got an email from the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, which is a chain coffee shop, certainly here in Los Angeles. I see it in other places. I think I saw it in Las Vegas. Congratulations. I thought this was spam. Congratulations. You've been selected as one of 60 winners of the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf 60-year celebration prize. Starting today, you will receive a free, all caps, regular size drink offer in your app every day until December 31, 2023. Thank you for celebrating 60 years with us. I go, this can't be real.
It can't be real.
So I go on and I start Googling to see. First of all, I look at the email and it's the exact same email that I get from them all the time. So did they get hacked? What's going on? Did somebody,
copy their email address.
Exactly.
Spoof it.
Yes. What's it called?
Spoofing.
Did somebody spoof it? So before I could even really get into it and read about it online, I get this email at 12:31 p.m., 6 hours later. Big oops. That's the title. But that's the subject in the email. Big oops. We sincerely apologize. There was a glitch in our system, and we incorrectly notified you regarding our 60th anniversary sweepstakes. We understand the confusion and disappointment. Oh, I don't think they know.
They can't know.
They can't. Yeah. Humans to humans. Now they're humans.
So really? Before they were just machines?
A bot screwed this up. This wasn't a human doing this. Humans to humans. Now they're talking to me as a person. Oh. They're trying to appeal to my sense of...
Why did they think you were a human?
I know, exactly. We sincerely appreciate your patience as we clear up this error. As an apology and thank you for your continued patronage... By the way, I don't even go to this place that often. That's why I knew I wasn't selected. It's not like I'm a heavy customer. I'm there every day or once a week. I'm barely there. So why would they make me the winner?
You know, it's so famous.
It's rigged, of course. It's rigged a little bit. We would like to offer you, ready for this, Jim? Here's the concession for the big oops. A free drink.
Wow.
A free drink. That's it. Please, instead of a free drink every day for 2 months. Like, now get a free drink. Please check your app for your special offer and enjoy your favorite drink or try something new on us. Thank you again for your understanding. Well, let me tell you something. Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, I don't understand. I don't understand at all. Here's the worst part. I look in the app and they gave me my free drink. It's now gone.
What?
It's gone.
Somebody drank your free drink?
No, Jim. As I'm researching for this podcast and printing out the emails, I see this little asterisk at the bottom, which asterisks need to be eliminated. Or how about this, Jim? How about a law where all asterisks have to be bigger than the rest of the font and or a different color? Because I completely missed this. This happened on Saturday, November 2nd. Okay? This is what it says at the bottom. What is it? Asterisk.
Asterisk.
Available for redemption through Sunday, November 5th. They gave me 3 days, 3 days to use my big oops, big oops. Let me tell you something. I'm coming for you, Coffee Bean. Jim, get closer to the mic.
I'm right here.
You were once a lawyer or something. Do I have a case?
Well, you have a case because you detrimentally relied on their first email. So you have to say that because of that, you canceled all your other coffee subscriptions.
Called everybody I knew.
Yeah, told everybody.
Social media bragged about it.
Basically giving them free advertising, and I think they owe you. Even this is free advertising for them.
That's the thing. Did Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf do this to create viral moments for them? That's what
possible.
I want to know. If they did that, can I sue them for that too?
Absolutely. I think that would be misleading advertising practices.
I'm not even kidding. Like, I hope people take this clip, this portion, and get it out there. I believe this is not commiserate to the excitement I felt from 6:31. I felt really good about my life from 6:31 until 6:32 to 12:31. Nearly 6 hours, I thought, I'm a winner.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to
I'm one of 60. Is I want to know, how do I find out how many people this happened to?
I wonder if it went out to, if it went out to everybody in their whole email system. I don't know. That seems a little bit suspicious.
Okay.
Sounds like an ad to me.
Right.
Sounds like a marketing promo.
And if it did, and then they're like, we'll just give everybody a free drink and nobody will use it between the 5th. Like, what percentage of people?
And they waited 6 hours to correct it. You think they didn't find out at 6:32 or 6:33 that this thing went out to everybody?
So am I a sucker for talking about this on my podcast right now?
No, I think, you know, people ought to know. People ought to know what's going on.
I'm not kidding. If I wanted to go after them, because this is what I feel like. I feel like they owe me a monetary amount. I haven't thought about it, but it's certainly, if a free drink every day is $5 times 30 is 153, they owe me
like $300.
$300 or something. If this
plus tax.
If this only went out to 200 people, they should have honored it. If it went out to 500 people, they should have honored it. If it went out to everybody, a free drink until December 31st at least, right?
Why not? Yeah. Well,
you're saying why not? You're being very casual. How do I pursue this, Jim Clemente?
Well, you can go to small claims court in Los Angeles and you can file a complaint.
What about?
And then you have to hire somebody to serve them. And they have to be served probably at their corporate offices. And you might be able to do what's called nail and mail. You mail them a copy and you put a copy on their door.
This is all to get $300?
Yeah.
Can't we pressure them online? Coffee, human to human, Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. I want more than a free drink that expires 3 days later. What's wrong with Orny Adams? Episode 96. I can't believe we made it to 96. Jim, I'm putting the headphones on so I can just hear the theme as I talk over it and raise the levels. Episode, I can't believe I made it to 96. Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler, badass podcaster, good friend,
yes, right,
lover of comedy. Excuse my voice. I was in Las Vegas all weekend sucking in horrible air that was being expelled by horrible human beings.
Really?
Yes.
In a closed environment?
Oh, I mean, Vegas, I am actually allergic to Las Vegas. This is what I have discovered.
Well, you know, Orny, as I was telling you, if you say you hate something, your brain's going to pick up as many things as possible to reinforce that.
But well, they're all over the place in Las Vegas.
I know.
That's right. I called you and you got all zen on me. You
sort of
sound like a Venice Beach hippie or something. You're like, listen, Orny, you can rewire your brain to see positivity in Las Vegas.
It can. Well, your brain does that if you want it to, if you allow it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not going to allow that. But you also said, which I love, that there is a positivity to my negativity.
Oh, absolutely. Because you turn everything negative in your life into comedy, which makes everybody outside laugh, which raises the incredible nature of life.
So I have to suffer.
You have to suffer so everybody else can laugh. That's it. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. How wonderful. How wonderful.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Well, you come to my shows because you need that relief.
I do. I buried in a lot of negative cases all the time, and I'm still working on cases that are pretty negative. I mean, they asked me to do some analysis on the guy who shot up everybody in Maine, killed 12 people, injured another.
Who asked 13. You to do some analysis?
The different TV shows did.
Does the FBI ever call you back and say?
Well, hey. They do on certain cases, yes. They ask me for my take on something or whether I could help get the message out to people.
Mm.
So I do that.
So what is your take on this FBI guy?
On this FBI guy?
I'm sorry. What is your take? I have four thoughts going. What is your take on the main guy?
Well, at the time, he was still at large, and I thought that he was suffering from some delusions, mm-hmm. and because he was 40, it had probably been going on for a while, but it really, sort of hit a critical point when he started threatening people in his reserve unit, and then he was sort of mandated into psychiatric evaluation for 2 weeks. But what they may or may not have been aware of is the fact that he bought guns just before that, and they didn't take him away. Even though his family members told the police they thought it was a risk, they didn't take him away. In the state of Maine, that's the only way to get guns away. People can't do it. Cops have to do it.
Well, this Second Amendment, you know, there's something before the Supreme Court right now where if you're a stalker and there's a restraining order against you, they take away your guns. And
yeah,
now
it's actually not stalkers. It's domestic violence, but it can be, it can include stalkers, but it's for domestic violence violators. And this is going to be tough because I think the Supreme Court is pretty stacked conservatively, which is means that they want to preserve all your Second Amendment rights. And they're asking questions about historically, like it can only actually be limited if historically.
I don't know what that sound is. It's every time you hear
this. This must be a Second Amendment person.
I don't know what it is. It's trash day and you can hear some trucks and sometimes they back up the street. And
it's great. It sounds like somebody's buzzsawing their.
We have wonderful noise pollution.
It's
here.
Great.
We really do.
But anyway, I can talk louder.
I can tell you this. You can talk louder, but when you listen to it, I don't know what Ernesto does, but you can barely hear it on the headset.
Okay, cool.
So continue on.
Anyway, the point is that he was apparently suffering from delusions that made him paranoid, and he thought people were talking about him, and he also thought that people were doing him bad, and he may have been an injustice collector. And much like...
What is that term?
Well, it means it's somebody who, throughout their lives, from the time they're small children until it blows up when they're adults, they collect injustices. Anything anybody does to them that they perceive as wrong, they sort of keep a mental book of it, or they write it down. And usually they give right before they either take their own lives or take other people's lives in the process of taking their life, they will give sort of like a manifesto, a diatribe about what they feel people have done to them over the course of their life, sort of trying to justified to the public why they're doing what they're doing.
So they've been wronged their entire life. So I feel a sense of injustice in the fact that a lot of times I don't feel appreciated. The audience doesn't appreciate me.
Oh, I can't imagine that. But the thing, the difference between...
Am I not appreciated collector? Is that what I am?
No, but the thing is that, Orny, what you do with it is you make comedy out of it, right? What these guys do with it is they... Bottle it up until they explode. They're so pissed off at the world,
right,
that they feel they're justified in hurting other people, and they're so extremely fed up with it that they take their own lives or they get involved in a suicide by cop
situation. How do we know when to say something? And I'm asking this because we had a conversation yesterday because I have... an acquaintance.
You come across people from time to time.
I got to tell you who I met last night.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Excuse me, Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf celebrating 60 years, giving gifts, reneging. The improv chain that has been very good to me my entire career. I'll be there this Saturday night at the LA Improv. I'll be there closing, I don't know if it's headlining, the 7 p.m. show. I'll be in Irvine December like 8th through 10th. It's a massive club. You have to come.
I do.
Seats like 500. Jim Cummins does my security. Former FBI profiler does my security and helps me sell the merch. You're a double threat to anybody else that wants to be on Team Orny. But they're celebrating 60 years. They had a big party last night. Unlike Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. These people threw a big party. They had a sushi station, which I'm a little, it's an improv, I'm suspect. I think they probably just went to a, you know, gas station and bought sushi. But then they had a person making pizza. They had free drinks. They gave me a vegan leather bag. I should show it to you.
And they didn't take it back.
They haven't taken it back yet. They, as a joke, they put a ticket counter, a counter in there because comedians are known for like counting the room. So they'll say, oh, there's 280 people here. And we'll count and go, there's 320. So we always fight with them. How many? Not the improvs, but every club.
Every other club.
Every venue. Not the improvs. No. So they gave a clicker. Now, the bag they gave me, the improv, I open it up. The zipper flies off. I broke it before. I thought I broke it.
It was a vegan bag.
Yeah, before I even got out of the parking lot.
At least no animals were harmed.
Yeah, no animals were harmed. Just my psyche. That's the trash truck going by. It's done that street. This is Jim's fault. We usually do the podcast at 11 a.m. Jim said, can we do it at 10? And I knew that this would have been an issue. But
I was hoping that, you know.
Should be it.
That the trash would come by.
So it turns out that you can unzip the entire bag and it lays flat and becomes a garment bag, which is the dumbest gift to give a comedian. We don't have garments. We wear T-shirts. So the bag is, I sent them a text this morning. I said, thank you for giving me the most complicated bag I've ever gotten in my life or ever seen. And why does my ticket counter only go to 75? Meaning that my audiences yes, don't get bigger than 75. And they're very
then
nice.
They don't have to pay you for more than 75.
But I'm waiting for them to say it's a big oops, human to human, Orny Adams. We want our bag back.
Okay, but you told me you met somebody.
Yes, I did. Cliffhanger.
Oh.
I was introduced to one of the Capitol Police that was there January 6th.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And just wrote a book. And I'll say his name. I sent, I took a picture with him and I put it up. I sent it to my mom. And you'll know him because he's the one who testified and was crying. And you know what? I'm going to let you pronounce his name so I don't get canceled.
Aquilino A. Gonella.
Is that it? Okay. Yeah. And he's also like, he's a lieutenant too. Veteran and author, and he just wrote a book and it's coming out, and I was introduced to him, and I recognized him immediately because I remember he testified and he was crying, and it was
an incredibly stressfully dangerous situation for the Capitol Police. And I know my brother worked at the National Capitol Response Squad with the Capitol Police when he was in the FBI, and we met great guys. We did a bunch of events. And sometimes I, just like I do with you, Orny, I helped do security at certain events. And the Capitol Police take their job very seriously. They're not only protecting national monuments, but our entire Congress and Senate is their responsibility.
Right.
And so when people come with the intent to attack them, that's a big deal.
Right. Right. I was shocked. I asked him, I said, how many Capitol Police were on duty that day? And he said, maybe 500, 600. And I said, when that clip of that guy breaching and breaking the window, the first guy, I said, why aren't you just shooting at this guy? Why aren't there automatic weapons and you just start firing?
Well, we take a little bit less of a violent approach than that, I think. when you're protecting property, then it's probably not good to use deadly physical force. But when it got to the point where these rioters had breached the inner circles,
right,
where our Congress members were trying to actually secure the vote, they did use deadly physical force.
They killed that one person.
Well, luckily, that was all it took to stop the advance, but it could have been very dangerous. You saw all the videos of all these our elected representatives running away. And unfortunately, some of them today don't seem to remember that.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Mm. So I spoke to this guy in great length.
Oh, really?
And clearly, this guy is just
very emotional about it.
Traumatized.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book. It's out, I think, today.
Oh.
And support
I'll have to read
him.
That. Yeah. What's the name of it? Do you remember?
If you Google his name, I believe it's the only book he's written.
Okay.
We discussed him coming on this podcast.
That'd be great.
It would be. Is there any, do I have to fear having a guest like that?
Well, I mean, because there's a significant portion of the country that believes that the election was stolen
and they believe that
it was justified.
Yeah, there are people that are upset at this guy for protecting Mike Pence, the vice president, and not allowing them to hang them or do something or stop this vote from being validated by Congress, which is the constitutional
duty. Process. Of course, I had to swear an oath to the Constitution. So did the National Capitol Police. And you have to uphold the Constitution. We have to do it the right way.
Yeah.
If there are issues, you do it through the court system. You do it by actually...
They did do that. And court after court turned it down. But here's the thing. People in my life get nervous. Like even the last guest I had on makes people nervous.
Really?
And I have run into people that, and this is why I said, do we say something? Somebody was on that was on this podcast is, I don't know what they're going through, but I'm getting multiple messages every day that they're running for their life, that they're barricaded in a place with weapons. They're showing me the weapons.
That sounds like paranoia, and that could be linked to mental health disorders. And that person, if they have weapons, could be a danger to themselves and others. So that may be a situation where you want to inform somebody, at least make that person aware that there are resources out there, hotlines to talk to and so forth. Yeah. But it sounds like that is not going to end well.
Yeah, and this has been going on for a few years. But it's escalating and it's escalating. And the stories are so fantastical. You're just like, this can't be real. Including my last guest, Yoshi, and I said to him, I said, this just doesn't seem real to me when I look at it on paper. But when you're this close to somebody,
right, and telling you the stories,
you see it. And I wanted to ask you this because I'm learning something as a podcaster. Or interviewer, mm-hmm. or interrogator, you have to sit there and let the person tell the story. So in the case of Yoshi, if you watch the podcast, I'm speaking very little, and I'm interrupting very little, and I'm not admonishing. I'm not, you know, he talked about, made me very uncomfortable. He talked about beating up his aunt and a female cousin and a few other people. You know, makes me uncomfortable when anybody's beaten up, but he was avenging his father's murder or death. According to him, we don't know the circumstances. And it makes me very uncomfortable. But I can't say, whoa, dude, you beat up a woman? Because it takes them out of that moment. So I want to know, and I feel a responsibility to my moral core, but I also feel a responsibility to the guests to get the story out.
Right.
As an FBI profiler, how do you handle situations when you're across somebody who you know has killed multiple people or done bad things?
Well, first of all, let me address your situation. In your situation, I thought you were being very respectful and responsible because you addressed the issues without being judgmental. You told him how you felt about it. You asked him whether he thought X, Y, or Z. It was a very interesting interview for me behaviorally. He's a very interesting person. He was raised in a very interesting way and all that. But in the FBI, when I do this kind of thing, when I'm sitting across from somebody who is a serial killer, for example, well, we're usually in a very restrained environment already. It's not somebody who's in the general public. If they've admitted to killing people or serial sexual assaults on people, generally by that time, they're either about to be arrested or already have been arrested. So it's not the same situation. And of course, we would put in our reports whatever they said. And if that means that they need a psychiatric evaluation, then they get one. But many times there are also people who have issues, but they never rise to the clinical level. In other words, a lot of people, you know, you hear about things and you think, oh, that guy's a psychopath, that guy's a sociopath, that guy's paranoid. But literally all of these things, you have to do either a direct or an indirect personality assessment. They have to actually go through a series of tests or checklists to see if they actually are a part of that category. And many times for people who aren't professionals, a lot of people look like it.
Yeah.
But for this person that you're talking about who has been telling you these things for years and it's escalating, that person does at the very least need an evaluation to see if he's healthy enough to be in the situation where he is. And if he has weapons, if he is in fact delusional, he may use those weapons against people who are completely innocent, who aren't doing anything to him because of his delusions.
Right. And are these like sociopaths that they can fool the person doing the evaluation?
Well, there are a lot of different, they call them batteries, different ways to test, and they should be able to, good clinicians should be able to test across a variety of batteries to determine whether they are obfuscating, whether they're telling the truth, whether they are actually in a bad position mentally at the time.
Yeah. I don't want to give away much of what the person told me, but this one line really stuck out when he texted and said, maybe you'll read about this in the news.
Mm, that's pretty dangerous. Yeah. Because he's talking about making a splash.
I said, are you going to hurt yourself? No, I think he's more afraid of people coming at him.
Well, that I don't know if, you know, in the letter left by the shooter in Maine, mm-hmm. he gave his son directions on what to do with certain bank accounts and things. And he stated that he didn't think he was going to be around to tell people about this. Mm-hmm. When you say maybe you'll read about it, when you talk, you're talking to him, right? And instead of conveying it to you, right, in that moment, right. he says maybe you'll read about it. That may be an indicator that he's not planning on being around much longer.
Mm.
So just, I would, if you can, reach out. Maybe I'll help you do that. Yeah. Reach out to some
authorities let's do that.
In that area.
Because, and he may be out of the country, but is he out of the country? Like, I don't know what to believe and not believe and what's made up, or maybe it is completely real. I don't know. But I got to thinking, and this is why I called you yesterday, we don't have a national hotline. Why don't we have a national hotline, a number I can call and say, hey, let me send some screenshots. I'm not equipped to handle this. I don't know if this should be reported. I don't know if I'm overreacting. I don't know what to do with it. Here you go. And we don't. There's no resource. I don't know who you call with it. You know, in Los Angeles, you call 911. They don't even send the police anymore. So right. are we all just on our own in this world?
One possibility, because you do have that internet aspect to it, is IC3.org, and that's IC3.gov, and that is where you report crimes over the internet. And mainly I've used it for when people say there's child pornography or threats against kids, but I do believe that it is a general resource for the nation. I'll look into that to make sure. However, there are plenty of hotlines that deal with people who are threats to themselves or mm-hmm. thinking about hurting themselves or others. So I think there are national hotlines for that. Yeah. And you could call that hotline to get information, find out information about what to do with this.
Okay. And I cut you off. You were talking about the Maine murderer. Why do these people, why don't they just kill themselves first?
Okay, well, here's the thing. This is what I'm talking about. He's an injustice collector, and he feels like he has every right in the world to get revenge. So this is somebody who has turned everything that's happened to them into a motivation for revenge. Mm-hmm. And in that process, they lose their will to live. Once, you know, I've always said this, there's a very thin line between suicidal and homicidal ideation. And so if people are thinking about hurting themselves, hurting others is not a big hurdle to get over. Mm. And so,
but what is that? There's no, you will be dead soon. So what? There's not, you don't gain anything. You're going to be dead.
Well, unfortunately, what their thinking is not rational. So you're trying to impose rationality on an irrational train of thought.
Yeah.
So what he was going to do was try to get revenge, and he aimed at people that he went to places that he thought people that he thought wronged him were at, and he killed a bunch of people in those two locations. He then went to the business where he was recently fired, probably because of his acting out behavior, and he took his own life. Mm. In between the two times that I was on Chris Cuomo's show on News Nation,
right.
You know, the last thing he asked me was, do you think he's still alive? And I said, look, I think the nature of his delusions and the nature of his actions have been revenge, not hiding from the police.
Right.
If he's still alive, I would expect that he'd still be acting. And because we haven't seen him shoot I don't think he's alive.
Oh, interesting.
And literally 5 minutes later, they called me and told me.
Who calls you?
Well, Chris Cuomo's producers called me and asked me to come back on because they had just located his body.
Wow.
And it appeared that he took his life shortly
after.
On my last special,
I joked, because that's what comics do. I said, if these people are so angry about the world, these mass shooters, why don't they go after the people that wronged them, not, you know, strangers? It feels like they'd have a list. Like, even I have a list I joked about. You know, I'm just trying to have... So I guess what you're saying is you can't have common sense when it comes to this.
Well, they don't...
You can't think with a healthy brain.
They're not thinking with a healthy brain. But, like what this guy did, he went to places that he thought he would encounter these people. He did encounter some of the people that he wanted to attack, but other people were just innocent. And he literally wanted to make, unfortunately, as big a splash as possible in his exit plan.
So it seems to me...
very dangerous.
Dangerous. And it seems to me that there's an increase in this type of thinking and action. And I feel like COVID had something to do with it.
Well, it's funny. And in a way, that's not funny at all. But I believe that COVID pushed many people to their limits. And so as a society, as a whole, we're all very much on edge. Yeah. So the slightest little thing could be the straw that broke the camel's back. And I think that is probably a very accurate observation on your part.
Well, you know what it's like? It's like a tea kettle. Have you ever come downstairs... And like my parents always make tea, and sometimes I'll come downstairs and I'll think I want tea, but they've already started the tea and the kettle is already 90% boiled. So I just turn it on and within a second,
and it doesn't take much.
Doesn't take much. And I feel like we're right there. We're at the boiling point.
Right. And, you know, I've talked to psychologists who believe that as a country, we're still 3 or 4 years away from seeing the worst of it.
Oh, no.
That it takes a while for PTSD to set in and for these levels of anxiety and depression to peak.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that people reach out to their friends and talk and reach out to their therapists. And if they don't have a therapist, there's so many ways now to get therapy online, and you can choose between different companies and different therapists and so forth. There's a lot of resources out there. I wish people would use them.
Yeah. All right, let's switch.
Okay.
Let's switch to Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler. How's your other podcast going?
Good. Real Crime Profile is doing great, and so is Best Case, Worst Case. I have a new podcast that's going to be coming out.
Jeez, I thought we were doing one. What happened?
Yeah, but I have one that we recorded a while back. They're delaying the releases of these shows because of, I guess, their internal politics or whatever, or business plans. But I have a new one coming out. It'll be coming out in the first part of next year. And it's about myself and another FBI profiler. That's a cool one. And I'm hoping that...
What's it called?
It's called... Well, right now it's called FBI Profilers. I think it might be...
Where's this one going to be?
It's going to be on Audible.
Okay.
Yeah.
The people that didn't want to do our podcast.
Well, not yet.
How dare they?
Not yet.
How do they not
understand that I went to them with this podcast 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just going to come out next year. They literally stretched out their release over years now, instead of what they used to do, which is sort of drop it a couple months after we turn it in.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, I can say this. I get more emails. By the way, you can email me at whatswrong@oneadams.com. I'm now being flooded. So something has tipped in this podcast where there's more and more listeners.
Cool.
And there's people writing in. Some of the emails, sorry, don't completely make sense to me. Some of them are very long, and I love the detailed connection that you have to the podcast and suggestions. I will sit down over Thanksgiving and really read more and try and include them in the podcast.
That's great.
One person wants to do the theme. She wrote in last night. She's a classical piano player. She asked for the lyrics. I would say listen to the podcast. The earlier episodes, I play the whole thing, and you can have fun with it and stuff like that.
Wow.
For sure. But you and I, people love us together.
Well, we will do a podcast together. It's just timing is everything.
I don't believe it anymore. I used to believe it. I got to
What's wrong with Orny Adams?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what's wrong right now. I got to find some music to really talk over this. That's not the right music. I got a gripe with my fans.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I got a problem with my fans.
Why?
I'm going to tell you. Hold on. Let me see if this is the right music. That's not it. Hold on. Trash song might be it. No, that's too upbeat. These fans. I don't know. I bought the rights to all these songs. And let's see if it's Low Life. No, they're all. I don't know which. Maybe I do this one.
Want me to hum something?
People loved it. People put this under my comments under every video. Ready?
Shingles doesn't care.
Shingles doesn't
Good
care.
Good for you. Shingles doesn't care.
Good for
care.
You. Shingles doesn't care. Maybe it's this song. No, it's not that song. All right. There's going to be no song underneath me. I'm just going to say this. I'm going to look straight into the camera. I'm getting more and more emails from fans or posts under videos asking me if they come back and see me at a venue, will it be all new material? And I have this to say.
What do you have to say?
It's none of your business. I want to write back. Do you have a transcript of what I said that night? Jim comes to multiple shows. Every show is different.
It is.
And do I repeat material? Of course. It takes a long time to craft a bit. Are you writing letters to the Rolling Stones? Are you going to play Start Me Up tonight? It's none of your business. It's none of your business. Just come to the show or don't come to the show. They're like, oh, I'm going to bring new people. I just want to know if it's going to be new. Let me tell you something. If I did all new, which I do, like I do a lot of new stuff. Yeah. This week in Vegas, somebody came back, brought all new people. And they said, well, I was disappointed you didn't do the smart fridge.
Exactly. And this is what I was going to say when you brought this up. It's like hearing your favorite song again. When you do a bit that I've heard before that makes me laugh, it still makes me laugh because every single time you do it, there are nuances that you change. You deliver it, you set it up, and you punch the line in very different ways. And so even though it's the same kind of material, it's different. And it's you, and it's evolving. And the order in the show evolves. Right. And what you say to the people in the audience evolves. I love it.
Thank
and, you know, I've seen you a lot. Yeah. But I've never been disappointed.
Thank you.
Never.
And it's fun. Sometimes I do one bit sitting. Sometimes I'm up. Sometimes I cut it off. Sometimes I interact with an audience.
Right.
It plays differently every crowd. Right. That's why you go see live comedy.
Exactly. That's the thing about live comedy. And you're drawn into it so much more because you're there and you're seeing the little nuances that you pick up. And what I love most about your comedy is that you have a unique perspective on life. And you are able to look at something as innocuous as drying your hands in the bathroom and turn it into a comedy routine. And you've changed me.
Yeah.
I actually dry my hands on the front of the towel now.
Yeah.
I do.
Why not? Everyone's going around the back.
I know.
Might as well.
Might as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably saved me from having germs all over the place.
But help me understand, as a former FBI profiler, why do these people think they deserve to know the answer to this? I'm saying that they send multiple emails over and over. They'll go through the website, then they'll go through Instagram, then they'll post on Twitter or X or whatever. Then they'll post under videos. Can they read the room? I'm not answering it.
Right. Well, I think some of that might be out of frustration about not being able to know. They might be, you know, wanting
control.
Yeah. And that might not be possible in most situations. But in terms of why they would want to hear different material all the time, they probably don't understand how live comedy works and how incredibly joyful people are when they hear their favorite joke come back in a slightly different way or mixed with other jokes, or when you get on a roll. And, you know, I love when you get very physical and you're you know, really into it, and you just, the things that come out of your mouth are hysterical. Yeah. And so they're missing that opportunity if they think that the only way to have fun at a comedy show, at a live comedy show, is to hear all new material. I would kind of hate it if you didn't go back to some of my favorite jokes that you tell.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And so you understand, like sometimes you'll hear somebody like a Bob Dylan say, oh, I wrote like a Rolling Stone in 4 minutes. And he, if he doesn't play that in, at the concert, you're furious.
Right.
But my, some of these routines I've been working on for years,
right.
I'm tightening and tightening it and making it concise, finding a home for it. Maybe sometimes it's at the beginning of the routine, sometimes it's at the end. Sometimes I take a bit and it's my strongest bit and it's the closing bit, and then I make it the opening bit.
Right.
Like there's a lot of
it's an orchestra, and you're orchestrating. You are putting together a show, an entertainment piece that is unique.
Right.
Every time you get up there, it is unique. Even if some of the material is similar or the same, you're putting it in different places. You're making it different. And you're making the experience for everybody in the room better.
Yeah.
So, I think they're just misguided. But you know,
it's a lot of chutzpah, as we say. That they think they have access to me. And the other thing is, a lot of people, just so you know, the people that are afraid of coming to see me a year later with new people if I'm going to do new material. I want to say this. I greatly appreciate they want to come back. Like, so there's that part of it. But also, as an artist, it's like none of your business how I create. Like, the one thing I love about Bob Dylan is he doesn't give what the people want every time. Sometimes he gets up there and he plays out of key, sings out of key, doesn't
really
play the hits. Yeah, he abuses the audience.
Yeah.
But it's what he's feeling at the time. So I don't know, you know, like right now, my current tour, I'm pulling from over 2 hours of material. So I don't know what I did in January 2023 and what I'm going to do in January 2024.
Because you're a dynamic performer. Right?
Yeah.
Everything is fungible, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to be better every time.
Yeah.
And also your mood and the crowd, all of that. You incorporate that into your show.
Yeah. And by the way, when you see a live show versus a taping, you are carrying the mood of what happened that day. Meaning, let's say the stock market was way up. Let's say there was a mass shooting. Let's say, you know, you're team just won the World Series. You're feeling all that. You don't feel that in when you're watching this on a television,
right,
or YouTube,
right,
or something like that.
Right. And I think a perfect example was at one of the shows, there was the whole front row was like all these sailors. They were all like competitive racing sailors.
Oh, they were like the World yeah. Australian Cup,
right.
World Cup, you know,
they
the America's
world,
Cup.
Yeah,
they were real
champions.
Yeah.
And they came in with, they were a group.
Yeah.
And they came in with a high level of energy.
Yeah.
And it was a great show because of that. And you were able to talk to them. And then, but then in other shows, you know, it might just be one young guy in the audience who says or does something that becomes really funny. And everybody is drawn into it because they're in the room with you.
Yeah.
You know, and they feel people who watch you online feel a connection to you. When you're in the room with you, good Lord, that connection is multiplied 100 times.
And I want to say this, that really accomplished people, like the astronaut Jim, comes over and over, like every 2 weeks. Mark Mann, who was a guest of
the more famous Jim.
No. You guys are equal. And now Mark Mann, who was a guest on my podcast, a really accomplished musician, comes over and over. In fact, another person that I think is coming on my podcast, who I've been having conversations with, is a music producer.
Mm-hmm.
And he produced Mariah Carey's
wow.
All I Want for Christmas Is You. I'm not produce it, sorry. He wrote it.
Wow.
He wrote it. And this guy comes to my shows and or has seen me, and he gets the nuance of the performance. So I'm just saying to all the people, just come. Or don't come. If it's really a concern, don't come. But I like when people come back. And a lot of the times in a weekend, like when I was at Jimmy Kimmel's the other night, I'll see the same people Thursday. They come back on Sunday. And a lot of the times they come up to me afterwards and said, geez, it was a totally different show. All new material. Now, it wasn't, but they feel it.
Right, because everything is different. All these other circumstances. We're going to talk about something like that later today, right?
We are. No.
No?
I think we're going to talk about our final story right now.
Oh,
I know what you're saying. Let's do that fast. Because you said fungible, and I thought, oh, We got a fungible type story, but Jim,
I'm talking about a different one.
Yeah, Jim, I talked about this on my podcast already. This guy is an author, Dr. Sapolsky, I think it's pronounced. I read one of his books because he studied monkeys, and there's a story about these monkeys that happened that I love, because I love retribution. I love when bad behavior is corrected.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought when you said retribution, I love when people get back at other people.
No, imagine if all of a sudden all the bad people in the world just died instantly. And that happened at a monkey colony. And I'm going to talk about it on my podcast. In fact, I'll have you on to talk about it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'll give you the material. So
you sent me this article.
Okay, and I'll tell you why. I was at home. My dad comes downstairs.
I love your dad and your mom, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they love you. They said, I'm glad you're having Jim on. We need an update. So this was in the New York Times. Now, my dad, they're very cute, my parents. They live a much better life than me. I wake up. You know what I do? I check who's been nice to me online, who's been not. I'm like Santa. Who's been naughty? Who's been nice? I look at how many times I'm being played on this.
Is that why you have reindeer in the garage?
Yeah, I am Santa man. I check how many times I'm being played on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, how it's being monetized. I'm all business. My parents wake up, they go downstairs, they put on classical music, and they read the paper. They have the New York Times and the Boston Globe. They make tea. I make coffee. And we sit there and we pass article, and we each create a pile of stories we should be reading. And my dad gave me this one.
You're so bright.
My dad gave me this one. Well, you know, it was different times parenting then. So if a word came up in conversation, or if I was reading something and I didn't know a word, my dad, or my parents, my mom and dad, they're both very smart, would tell me to get up, and I'd go into the living room and get the dictionary and look up the word.
Yeah.
And that's how I was raised.
Well, that's smart.
And I was raised to read the New Yorker and look up every word. And you start seeing words in combinations and understanding the meanings. And like, I remember the first one that I was fascinated with was in an article. It said calamitous vicissitudes. And I'll never forget that. And I love a good, you know, turn of a word or uses a word.
You love a good calamitous vicissitude.
Yeah.
Huh?
So this is an article called, it says, a conversation with Robert Sapolsky. What if believing in free will is just a choice? And my dad gave it to me, and I thought we were going to agree, and we didn't. And I said, I got to get Jim on, because Jim's the decider. Who's right?
Oh, boy.
Who's right? Me or my dad? This is what he says. He contends that we are not free agents, but that biology, hormones, childhood, and life circumstances coalesce to produce actions that we merely feel were ours to choose. It's a provocative claim, he concedes, but he would be content if readers just simply began to question the belief which is embedded in our cultural conversation. Getting rid of free will completely strikes at our sense of identity and autonomy and where we get meaning from, Sapolsky said. And I'll just read this paragraph before I ask your opinion of this. There are major implications, he notes. Absent free will, no one should be held responsible for the behavior, good or bad. Sapolsky sees this as liberating for most people for whom they have been blamed or punished or deprived or ignored for things that they have no control over. I can't even read it. I'm a pretty good reader. I even stumble saying these words. I look like an idiot.
Let me just say, you and your performances, just like we just talked about, are proof that he's wrong. It is not true, because humans, one, are dynamic. And they can change their mind in the middle of doing something
He's saying if you change your mind, like if you floss your teeth, you can't help but floss top first. And if you change your mind, it's your biology, something happened.
What I'm trying to say is that he's trying to simplify it, and he's trying to universalize it, which is bullshit, because you can have strong feelings and all your feelings are telling you, I want to do this.
Yeah.
But then you have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
and you find out that they'd like to do something else and you care about them, or somebody pisses you off and you don't want to do what they want to do. It's a dynamic, fluid situation, and you actually can sit there and think.
Yes.
And participate in the process.
Right.
And you can, in the middle of doing something that you feel really motivated to do,
yeah,
change your mind and do something
but
else.
He's saying how you got to that final decision or what you did, that you're not a free agent, but it was biology, hormones, childhood, and life circumstances coalescing.
All right, except that he doesn't know about genetics loads the gun, psychology and personality aim it, and your experiences pull the trigger. But the psychology and personality, you're constantly changing that. You're constantly participated in changing that and developing that. So when you make a decision based on your personality,
right,
it filters your experiences. Yes, the way you look at things is based on your personality, but you are that personality.
Yeah.
It's in there. So you actually have the ability to lean towards this side, the dark side, or lean towards the light side.
Yeah, yeah.
Do make bad choices or good choices. You are doing that. It is your purchase. This is how you're participating in it. And what he's trying to say is, no, that's already predetermined. And what I'm trying to say is, no, it's not predetermined.
I know. I'm with you. 100%. In fact, I'll go as far as to say that this is dangerous.
Of course it is.
You're excusing. So you're saying, like, this guy that you're...
The shooter.
The main.
Yeah.
He's not responsible. You can't take away. We're all responsible for our actions.
Yeah, he made the decisions that got him to that place. He actually had probably tens of thousands of opportunities through the course of his life to do something different. To say, well, that person hurt me because they were hurting, or that person hurt me because they didn't understand. I'm going to let them know me better. He could have made decisions all along the way that would not have built up to the way they did. But some people have psychological disorders that can take control of their mind,
mm-hmm,
and they lose their free will. That is a reality for a small subset of human beings.
Right.
And for a small period of time,
okay,
because some of those things can be cured. Some of those things can be affected positively.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the vast majority of humans, we do have choices that are real. We make them every day in the privacy of our own brain.
And I don't know if he's being provocative. I don't know.
Of course he is.
I'll tell you what's...
Got him in the New York Times.
I'll tell you what's biology coalescing. I've become a middle-aged man that's doing this. Okay, that's doing this. This is not where I saw my life ending up.
Did your father do that?
No, but like this is like everybody that in the news that, you know, they're going to read something and I'm all serious and I pull the glasses off and then I wave them at you.
You wear your glasses in your show.
I think he's trying to be provocative. I think this is what we discussed growing up. It was called nature versus nurture. And he's repackaged it in a way to be provocative and create a conversation, just like coffee bean and tea leaf. They're no different.
And I add, in the middle of nature and nurture is that whole psychology and personality bit, because you actually participate in the formation of your personality and your psychology.
But listen to this. If the interviewer says, if we're not responsible for our actions, can we take ownership of them? Meaning, can I be proud of my career? Can I be proud of what I've accomplished? Now, I will admit, my biology has wired my brain to see things differently. I have an incredible work ethic. I wake up every single day at probably 5 a.m., sometimes 4 a.m., and I start preparing. And even for this podcast, you saw it. I was still preparing the minute you came. I'm like, just let's watch this video so we can discuss this. And I love it. I understand I'm wired to have maybe perhaps more success in stand-up comedy. But listen to this.
Well, you have maximized the traits you have.
Yes.
You made those decisions.
Yes.
You could have, it was a possible decision that you were going to become a neuroscientist or, you know, or a politician or, you know, somebody who made coffee and didn't mislead their customers.
Yeah.
But you made the choices and you had to work towards that. And you took a lot of risks to do that. And The more success you had, the more reinforcement and the more ownership you took of your accomplishments, which gave you the confidence to do what you do and to
be
successful.
Not according to Robert Sapolsky, well, Dr. Sapolsky.
Bring him in here and let's talk to him.
This guy's at a real school. He's like at, where is he? Who cares? He said, I know, Sapolsky, come in here. Talk to me and Clemente.
Yeah.
Okay? You would like to observe monkeys? Here you go. He says, we can take ownership in a purely mechanical sense. My molecules knocked into the molecules making up that vase of flowers and knocked it over and broke it. That's true. He's saying that you didn't even pick this shirt. That you didn't, you had no, this wasn't free will. No matter what, you were going to end up in this shirt today.
I do not believe fate is what determines what happens in life. What I believe is you have to be open to the myriad of different potentialities out there. The coincidence is that if you're just staring down at your feet every day, you're not going to know. But if you reach out to other people, you're bringing that into your life, those experiences. And how you respond to them is you. That is you.
Right.
It is not predetermined because you have billions of options. And you're taking choices all the time
right.
that will affect what's going to happen in your life.
Absolutely. We're on the same page.
Okay, so and your dad doesn't agree?
I don't understand his explanation. It doesn't, it feels like he feels like biology and life circumstances play a much bigger role that leads to the person not ultimately having other choices, but to do something maybe dangerous or put on that shirt.
Well,
I see it differently.
Yeah. Well, I think he's not looking at the dynamic and ongoing participation in your own personality and psychology. That is something that, you know, you can wake up and be determined to do your work, but your mood could be different today right. from yesterday and tomorrow. But despite that, your mood doesn't absolutely determine what you do.
Right.
Because you have developed good habits. You are very concerned about what you're doing and you want to make it right. You have a very meticulous, you know, way about you, and you want to make the best product you can. So despite your feelings, you don't necessarily just go with them, but sometimes they can win the day.
Yeah.
And you make those choices of whether you're going to let that happen or not.
The only thing I like about this article, it has spurred a debate and a conversation, which I think is healthy because I don't mind revisiting that. And anyway, I'll have my dad listen to the podcast.
Okay,
and,
well, I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
I feel bad now.
With you, but
yeah, I feel sorry, Dad, that I disagreed with you publicly.
You're still a great guy.
I agree. So let's get on to this. Have you heard the story about the woman in Australia? This is one of the biggest stories down there. She supposedly poisoned her lunch guests with death cap mushrooms. Three people died. A fourth, right, Jim? Yeah. Was it three people died?
Three people died.
A fourth was in the hospital
for a long time and almost died. And a fifth person.
Uh-oh.
Was supposed to be there, but canceled at the last minute.
Who was that?
Her ex-husband.
Oh, yeah. He was supposed to go. He was on the list.
I believe. And should we jump right into this?
Well, I think, first of all, it's, I hate to say it, almost a brilliant way to try and kill people, because I don't want to encourage it, but death cap mushrooms almost certainly will kill you. I've got some statistics. It's the deadliest known mushroom to humans. Apparently other species can eat it. About 9 out of 10 fungi-related deaths are attributed to the death cap mushrooms, according to the Victorian government, which says the symptoms include, and these begin about 6 to 24 hours after the mushroom is eaten, you vomit, you have gastro.
That's not fun.
It's not a good way to die, and it takes over a week. But this is, I'm just seeing all the facts that I was talking about. A single mushroom may contain many times over the amount of toxin that would prove fatal. Ingesting only a small piece is enough to kill an adult. The toxins cannot be destroyed by boiling, cooking, freezing, or drying the mushroom. That scares me.
Right, and once they're in your system, they're in your tissues, and you can't get them out.
And they taste good. The death cap mushroom tastes good.
But don't say that. People are going to start eating them.
No, we don't want to. No. And these mushrooms, Jim, they used to just be in Europe. Do you know why they're now here in North America?
Pacific Northwest? I can't imagine.
See, I'll tell you why. Because our trees weren't good enough. We started importing trees from Europe for ornamental reasons. And on those trees attached to the roots, because these are mushrooms that attach to the root. And what they do is they take sugars from the tree to grow, and they give, it's a very symbiotic relationship. Oh, they give back to the tree certain nutrients that they need. And these were on the roots. So when they planted these trees that were brought in from Europe into the ground, these fungi started to grow, and they've taken over. They've actually taken over where other mushrooms used to be. They're starting to dominate and take over, and they're all over Australia now.
Oh, geez.
And even mushroom experts sometimes have trouble identifying them. This is what scares me. When I go to the supermarket and buy mushrooms, how do I know that they are safe?
Wow. Well, it's a good question, especially when you know these things are out there. But luckily, these have kind of a unique shape.
Mm-hmm.
They do appear different, and hopefully they don't morph in terms of their appearance. But I want to get back to this woman who cooked this dinner. She invited her ex-husband, his parents, another couple that were kind of mentors, and herself. And of those people, four of them showed up. But her ex-husband canceled at the last minute.
This guy's out of his mind. She was serving beef Wellington. It looked good. I saw it. It's not an easy dish to make. I'd like to say this. I had beef Wellington in Las Vegas. I don't want to plug. They didn't give it to me for free. I wish they had. But I went to Hell's Kitchen.
Okay.
And it was amazing.
Okay, but let's not get sidetracked here. It killed these people.
Right? I know, but it looks good.
Okay, well.
It looks good.
It's better to feel good than to look good, I'm afraid. But anyway, the point is, I believe that because three of the four people that were poisoned died, and the fifth person that was supposed to be there was her ex, and the whole thing was that this was supposed to be a sort of a reconciliatory lunch. Yeah, because between her and her ex.
Yeah.
But she invites her ex's parents and this other older couple as sort of mediators.
Meat? What? Meat eaters? Death meat eaters?
Yeah, but I think this was a callback to the DC sniper case.
What?
I'm telling you.
What, you're tying these two together?
I am.
What is this?
Well, in the end, Muhammad wanted to kill all these people. And then his ex-wife, to make it look like there was just a random serial killer out there killing people. He killed all those people, 10 people. He was going to kill his wife next. He couldn't find her yet.
Yeah.
Just so that it would be mixed in with this serial killer, and he figured he'd be able to get away with it that way.
Interesting.
And so I think she wanted to kill her ex-husband.
Oh.
So she killed her good friend and mentor couple.
Right.
And her in-laws to make it look like this was all just a big, bad accident.
But how can they prove it? She says she prepared her beef Wellington, and I'd like to try it because I feel like I'm not hers. Maybe without the mushrooms. I'd like to monitor the mushrooms. Now, by the way, I'm afraid of mushrooms now.
Okay.
Because I love mushrooms in my eggs, but how do I know that they're safe?
Well, maybe you should cook them yourself.
She prepared the beef Wellington using a mix of mushrooms from a supermarket and dried mushrooms she got from an Asian grocery. It sounds racist that she's blaming the Asians.
It is.
The dish features beef tenderloin baked in a pastry. I highly recommend Beef Wellington that doesn't have death cap mushrooms.
Let's just take the mushrooms out. But the point
is, the mushrooms is part of.
Well, make sure that they're not death cap mushrooms.
Wait a minute, Jim. You love mushrooms.
I do.
When we go out,
I love mushrooms.
My Mexican restaurant, you go, you order fajitas, and you pimp it up. With some mushrooms.
Yeah, I do.
I look over at his fajitas and I go, well, why do you have mushrooms?
Because I asked for it.
But you do it in a very quiet way that I don't notice it. One time you did it when I went to the bathroom and I'm on to it. And I want, is there an upcharge for those mushrooms?
I don't know, but can I get back to what
yes,
I'm talking about?
Of course.
About? This woman apparently did not invite her children to this lunch specifically.
I think she claims they had leftovers.
Well, she may claim that, but that doesn't bear itself out. If those mushrooms are in that meal, they would have gotten violently ill. She also claims that she ate it, and yet she survived. And she didn't end up in the hospital.
And she doesn't look like a beacon of health.
Whatever that is. But the point is, apparently, one of the articles I read mentioned that her ex-husband had gotten sick. Mm-hmm. On multiple occasions before,
right.
After eating food from her.
Oh, interesting. This is a more organic way to kill somebody versus the old engine coolant in
the
Gatorade.
Exactly. And I think what this calls for is an equivocal death investigation. I don't know if we've talked about that before, but that's when you don't know. You may know the cause of death, poisoning via death cap mushrooms, but you don't know the manner of death, homicide. Suicide, accident, natural, or undetermined. Five different manners of death. So an equivocal death investigation is when it's not absolutely clear which one of those manners is what is involved in this case. You have to do this investigation. And you look at all the people around the victims, and you look at we do what's called a psychological autopsy on them to see what their circumstances were. And to see their relationships with the other people that interacted with them. And you look at any of the family members, close associates, and do the same thing with them.
And I think you investigate anybody close to her that has died, including her mother,
sure.
Who died a few years ago.
Right. And then you look at her words. Statement
was... Oh, you
watched
her.
I did.
We watched her confession together right before.
I did.
Yeah.
But I also watched another one. And she said, I just want to repeat. This is important to her. Her repeating to the press that these people never did anything to harm her.
Yeah.
That's what she wants to repeat.
Right.
Because what she has done, I believe, in her mind, is justify what she's doing. And know and prepare in advance a statement. In fact, she also said, and so-and-so died. Oh, no, he's the one that survived.
Right.
She had it prepared.
Huh.
A statement.
So you think that's a guilty admission?
Yes. That
she slipped and said he died because that's in her mind.
That's what she had planned.
She had planned.
Yes. Huh. And she wants to repeat that they never did anything wrong to her because this is her alibi. She wants to get that out. She doesn't say, I can't believe I miss my friend so much. I can't believe that I might be at fault, you know, that something I
she
gave
did
them,
a little of the I miss
she
them.
Did it afterwards. But what was most important was for her to repeat that they never did anything to her because that is her alibi. She wanted to get her alibi out before she express this sorrow.
She's already talking too much.
Crocodile tears.
Yeah, those are horrible. I'm not a good actor. I could do better than that. But she is talking too much already. Yeah. I don't know what...
she's trying to get her story out. That's what she's trying to do. In other words, it wasn't a genuine her feeling horrible about what she may have done. Mm-hmm. Accidentally, and for those who can't see me, I'm holding up air quotes, accidentally.
Those are the people not subscribing to the Patreon and seeing it months late. That's another thing I want to bring up just before we get into the... Please stop sending me emails or stuff online asking me why the episodes appear on YouTube later. I talk about it in the podcast. You can see this. This will be up in a couple of days. I'm celebrating a birthday this week, Jim Clemente.
Wow.
So I will not be editing.
Tony Adams birthday.
Yeah, this will be out probably in a couple of days. The audio will be out tonight. In fact, I want to say this. Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club in Las Vegas brought out a cake on stage. They sang for
Aww.
Me and they gave me a very nice gift. I would like to say what the gift is, but I'm afraid other comedians
might feel hurt.
And they'll say, well, when do I get my? So we'll just say they gave me
a nice gift.
Yeah. Because, and I, this is how I've become more aware as I've gotten older. Oh, I texted them.
This seems like empathy.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
I texted them. I said, I want to talk about this on my podcast. The gift, I was going to hold it up and everything. Unlike the stupid bag from the improv and the reneged gift from Coffee Bean and Tealip. This is something I'm excited about. And I was going to hold it up and thank them and brag a little. You know, it's a little bragging.
You don't need to do that.
Yeah, but I texted them. I said, hey, I'm thinking maybe this is going to open a can of worms for you guys.
Mm.
And they just wrote, ha-ha, or something. So I decided not to. But they've been very
then
kind
you
to
you find
me.
Out they give it to anybody who ever shows up there.
Yeah. Oh, no, then I'll be furious. If I'm not I should be a standout. Standout
if they were
everywhere.
The coffee bean, they would.
I'm a big deal, Jim. And these clubs need to treat me differently. In fact, what I did... And you can
you are a big deal.
Evaluate
and I've
this.
Got to touch a famous person.
I actually sent a picture of the gift to other comedy clubs and said, time to step up your game. That's what I did. I used it as leverage.
Sure.
I will be returning to the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club if they can figure out the second half of my contracts for next year. Four times I'll be in Vegas. And the audience is building. I'll be at the Ice House in December, Irvine Improv.
Love the Ice House.
Yeah, I'll be at the Improv Los Angeles on Saturday. Well, you'll come December 16th, Ice House. The weekend before, like 8th through 10th, I'll be at the Irvine Improv. Tickets on sale now. I'll be at the Improv in Hollywood this Saturday. Sunday, I'm at the Comedy Store. Tuesday, I'm at the Comedy Store. Then it's Thanksgiving. I'm going to take a little bit of time off. But let's... And Jim, do you have anything to plug? You don't really.
I mean, just the same old things. I've been doing Real Crime Profile and Best Case, Worst Case, but I'll have some new things coming out soon. The Bluebeard radio play series.
Which I wasn't a part of.
Well,
I have a great voice, and I have a voice agent now, so you can.
I just didn't realize. It's my loss, I'm sure. But anyway, that should be coming out in the first couple of months.
And that's a scripted podcast.
It's a scripted radio play with actors playing the parts. And it's actually kind of a pretty big deal for me. So I'm pretty excited about it. And that'll come out. It's also going to be on Audible. And it's going to be...
Jesus, Audible people love everything you do. That doesn't include me.
Not yet. We have to...
No, we've been talking about this project for a year. It started
a year ago.
And I said,
almost
we should
exactly.
Just do it.
You know why?
I go, let's just do it.
I know.
It was your birthday, around your birthday and my birthday. You had a birthday recently.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So are they going to, when they investigate this woman in Australia, and then we're going to wrap it up, will they go to the supermarket where she claims she bought these mushrooms?
Of course.
In the Asian... grocery store.
Yeah, I'm certain they will. And they'll find out what she actually purchased, and they'll probably also find out that she was somewhere else buying these.
Well, wait a minute. They grow. What if somebody did pick mushrooms from their backyard? Because they grow all over the place. In fact, they grow in a circle around the tree. So if you see a circle around the tree, I wouldn't eat anything. I see videos of these guys out in the woods with their knives clipping mushrooms and eating them. Mm. Pass on the mushrooms. But what if she claims she accidentally picked them? I'm sure she will.
But then she would have to show where she picked them from, right?
Yeah.
And she would have to they'll search all of her internet activity. They'll see if she looked up what they look like so she could identify them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll see why her claim that she ate some of the same stuff at this lunch, why she didn't get finally ill. Why did every other person at that table?
Yeah. Well, she did get ill. I think she went to the hospital for a day. So she probably just licked a little of this mushroom.
I don't know. I don't know.
But how can you, what would it be if she accidentally?
Well, they probably had to do, they probably did blood tests on her, and they'll look at that blood work and see if there is an indication that she has it in her system.
Yeah.
But how can you tell? You have to do a comprehensive investigation. They obviously felt they had enough to arrest her and charge her. So, again, arrest is just the beginning of the investigation.
Let me just say, just because this is really an information podcast, it's not just comedy, but symptoms can include violent stomach pains, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Oh, God, it sounds horrible. Now, here are some famous people who may have died from death cap mushrooms. Holy Roman Emperor Charles VI, and possibly Roman Emperor Claudius.
Really?
Yeah, these are famous people. In fact,
and do you think they were killed or that was accidental?
I didn't get into it. There's a lot of research I got to do. I do this all on my own, Jim. I think less than 100 people die a year from this. She said, the woman who did it, "I am now devastated to think that these mushrooms may have contributed to the illness suffered by my loved ones." It sounds really scripted.
It is. That's what I'm trying to say.
I really want to repeat that I had absolutely no reason to hurt these people whom I've loved.
Really,
that's what you're talking about a minute ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what's more important to her. You know, she has this very scripted, very formal, "I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sad," but it doesn't feel real.
She looks like a mushroom killer, doesn't she? So, Jim, any final thoughts on this before I wrap it up?
Yeah, I just feel bad for those families, especially because they came there to help her.
Yeah.
And I think she took their lives. I think it looks like she took their lives so that she could take the life of her ex and have it swept under the rug.
Much like the
DC Sniper.
DC Sniper, who you helped catch.
I did.
How did you do that?
What do you mean? I was an FBI profiler. I worked the case.
All right, we're going to talk about that another time. But here are some names of lethal mushrooms. And I have to say this. The mushroom community is fantastic at names. I'd like them to name my next album. Listen to these. These are deadly mushrooms. Destroying Angel. Angel of Death. Funeral Bell. Deadly Webcam, Autumn Skullcap, Deadly Dapperling, Fool's Mushrooms. These are they're as good as the people that name the horses in the Kentucky Derby.
I think you could definitely do a book series with those names.
Yeah, I think we should name guns.
There's
one called the Widowmaker, but everything else is AK. They really make it seem like it's just a mechanical thing. Mm. But they should name these guns, you know, Destroying Angel. And stuff like that.
Mm.
That's what I think. But these guys, these could all be horses in the Kentucky Derby. I want to thank Jim Clemente for coming on. This is one of my favorite episodes. This was
I
want to
thank you for always being so hospitable. You always...
Absolutely.
It's great being here. You still make me laugh, even if we're talking about some rough stuff sometimes. But I'm so happy, man. And, you know, it's so great being here.
We fist bumped a lot.
Yeah.
This is my friend Kirk doing the theme, What's Wrong with Oney Adams. I encourage everybody to do the theme. If you want to see one of my shows in all new material, go to oneyadams.com/tour. And you can email me at whatswrongatoneyadams.com. And I want to thank, what is this? The song keeps going. I want to thank Ernesto Hurtado for finalizing this. We've got some great guests coming up. Jim, this was a great podcast.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Great.
What do you think? I've got some mushrooms. I'm thinking you and I go cook an omelet, some
you
beef
know,
Wellington.
I have a lunch date that I got to
go. Oh, you do?
To.
Where are you going to lunch?
I'm just going to lunch.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you to the people who support me on Patreon. Thank you for the people watching on YouTube. Thank you for the people that are rating it and sharing it. Episode 96 is done. And you know what that means, Jim?
What does that mean?
Next one's going to be called Episode 97.
Wow.
That's how it works. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Dude, amazing.
It was fun.
Yeah. Just fun?
It was amazing.
Do you know that I'm so funny, people call me a fun guy? I don't think that. Maybe that's not how the joke goes.